From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. They used to say that Reggie Jackson was Mr. October, but I think my guest Casey Affleck has been beat this month. He's got two big films and two very different performances: The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. Casey, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Elvis.
This is interesting because you've got two movies, one by a guy making only a second movie and then Gone Baby Gone by a first-time director. So what's it like for you going into these situations with these movies with guys still kind of feeling their way through the process a little bit?
Well, you know, I never really felt like that because in the first case, you know, Andrew Dominik had made Chopper, which was a little Australian movie with Eric Bana.
And another movie based on a true life outlaw.
Yeah, but it was really good. Now, not that many people saw it, unfortunately, but it's a great movie, and the people that have seen it kind of recognize it for, you know, having this amazing performances and being kind of uniquely kind of well done for a first movie. So I trusted him. He'd already done something really good. He'd written a couple scripts that I'd read. So I knew that he had been working. He wasn't kind of a newcomer. And I knew that kind of everything that he'd done was great. So I felt very comfortable. And not just that, I was super excited to be kind of working with him. And then in the case of Gone Baby Gone, obviously, I knew that director, Ben, my brother, and it was his first movie, but it was also, obviously, he'd been, you know, working in film for a long time. He'd been an actor, had worked with a lot of different kinds of directors, and, you know, always being sort of a curious person by nature, I think that he'd just sort of picked up a lot, you know, and you stand around on a film set, and, you know, a lot of time, there's not that much to do waiting for kind of the camera to get set up and stuff, and so there's a lot of time to ask people, if you're curious, sort of, what, you know, what's your job? What do you do? And sort of learn about all sort of aspects of filmmaking. And Ben had been doing that for years. So I think that he was well prepared for this.
But you've had a lot of experience with directors who are really kind of authorial directors like Steven Soderbergh and Gus Van Sant, guys who really have been in the trenches for a long time and done lots of different kinds of stuff. And that must be going from working with those kinds of guys to these two must have been very different for you, though, even given that they knew they wanted to make these films and their command of just being around the medium for a long time. Still, they haven't actually done it themselves mm-hmm. that much.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, I would be hard-pressed to kind of put my finger on any one kind of quality that could that I could sort of attribute to Andrew and Ben that I couldn't to Soderbergh and Gus. I know that sort of Andrew and Ben are both, they both came at it with a kind of very clear vision, something that they, for what the movie was going to be, and where Gus kind of comes to a movie and sort of, as far as I can tell, you know, sort of sees what he's got and sort of finds the best way to capture it. Ben and Andrew both kind of wanted to control, kind of, you know, to create the whole thing, you know, all the, you know, there was a lot of attention to detail and kind of, a lot of planning, and so maybe, you know, Gus and Steven, you know, the more you work, maybe they've kind of learned to kind of go into it with an open mind and sort of be more flexible or something. Other than that, you know, every director is kind of different. The way that they work is different, and, you know, if you put me on a set with Andrew and didn't tell me anything about him, I wouldn't have been able to say, oh, this is probably this guy's second movie.
Really?
I mean, I'd never seen a movie so well prepared. Every single scene in that movie, I sort of had like an astonishing amount of research had been done to prepare for it. You know, there were 50 different kind of photo references for how he wanted things to look or how he wanted, what the mood of the scene was. He had different songs that he had in mind for kind of how, you know, what the mood would be like or what the pace of the scene would be. He had clearly thought of sort of each character's dialogue and different interpretations of it. And, I mean, it's just sort of this handmade movie, you know, and every little bit of it has Andrew's signature on it. And so it's, he worked like a pro. He worked like somebody who had been around for a long, long time. And I'd heard those stories about people like Coppola and stuff, but I'd never really seen it. And there it was.
It's The Treatment, my guess, is Casey Affleck, we're talking about his movies, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. You said Coppola. How did this experience seem like that to you? Just that kind of intense preparation and immersion into the process?
Yeah, and I had never exactly – I mean, I haven't ever worked with him. I haven't even met him. But Matt Damon, a friend of mine, had worked with him, sort of told me a little bit about his process and kind of, as you say, sort of total immersion in it, and just seems like somebody who – when they're directing a movie, just goes under completely. And Andrew is a lot like that. He sort of lived the movie. And I mean, you know, there's some days when he seemed to be in costume and period clothes. I don't know. I think either his stuff, he just was cold, and so he kind of picked up on from the wardrobe trailer, or maybe it was just he found himself just being drawn into the movie. I don't think he slept much, and he, you know, he would call me, you know, if our call time was 7, he'd call at 5 and say, I've been thinking about the same case, and I want this, and I want that, and then he'd call, you know, late that night about the following day, and, you know, the post-production on the movie took a long time. We made it about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and people wanted to know sort of what was going on with the movie and why it had taken so long, and there'd sort of been rumors that it must kind of be bad, or there must be sort of some tension between the studio and between Andrew or between Brad. But in reality, it's just the way that Andrew works. You know, he's a perfectionist, and he, I think he probably watched every foot of film, I don't know, 50 times or something crazy. I mean, he just went over and over and over the thing, staring at the screen and made 100 different versions of the movie and would go back and go back and go in late at night and keep working. And, you know, that kind of passion is hard on other people that are around it, you know, because making movies is a kind of collaborative enterprise. It takes a lot of people. And so it can't just be a one-man show. You know, if Andrew wants to work until, you know, 3 in the morning, the editor has to as well. So that was hard on people, and it was like that during shooting, too. He was driven, you know, so there'd be very long days. There would be scenes where we would shoot one take, you know, one setup for 4 hours, literally, and it kind of wore people down. But at the same time, you know, he is so passionate, and he so loved the movie, and he so loves movies, and he's such a lovable person that he sort of inspired people and invigorated people, and so had this kind of weird combination of everyone sort of feeling like they'd never worked so hard, but also feeling really good about it.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Casey Affleck. He has two new movies, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. I guess this must have been great for you because you really are playing two different characters in that movie. I mean, you become a different person in the last third. So having somebody with that kind of intense connection to the material, who's keeping his eye on it, it's got to help you a lot in terms of that last third, what becomes a really kind of elegy for this life that he wished that he had that he didn't have, and he's reliving night and night and night over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the book, that was kind of my favorite part of the story. I sort of felt like so much of that, of the novel and the script and the film is stuff that we've heard before about Jesse James.
And the book doesn't deal with so much of that celebrity kind of culture stuff that the movie does.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't so much. But I think that just because it's a movie there and because there's a movie star involved, people, they make their own sort of analogies to kind of contemporary celebrity culture. And so I'm not sure how much of that actually was in the movie. It was never something that I talked about with Andrew. I never something I heard him talk about. Now, he might have just been one of those people, you know, like Gus, that kind of either keeps the kind of themes to themselves, or they kind of like to find the themes as they go, sort of let the themes kind of reveal themselves. But either way, that was never a part, you know, part of any of our discussions while we were making it. So I'm not sure where it came from. I mean, there are obvious kind of parallels in the relationship between Robert Ford and Jesse James to kind of a fan and a famous person, you know, and kind of there are certain terms that we've come up with now, and, you know, a stalker or things like that that weren't around then.
But it's kind of in the book, too, in that section we're talking about, where he really is forced to relive this section, it really is like the guy who has to deal with the fact this relationship is over. He's ruined this relationship. Mm-hmm. This, he really is kind of a spurned lover at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I thought of the relationship in those kind of terms much more than I did in terms of kind of a fan and some famous person. It was, it definitely seemed like about the ways in which people can ruin a relationship. You know, they kind of find someone that they've, the kind of person they've always been looking for, they fall in love, and then sort of the relationship gets ruined, and you spend years wondering, well, how did that happen? How did it fall apart like that? Didn't, you know, it didn't make sense.
In the book, and I wonder if this is something you used too, it sort of treated his moment to stand up because he hasn't really stood up right for most of that. And then he does that because it's finally a chance for him to sort of be recognized for something on his own. And I wonder if that was something as a way you sort of internalized and playing it that way.
Yeah, for sure. You know, sometimes I see people and you can tell how much they want to be around the person they're with often if they're sort of how they're kind of treating themselves, you know. And I felt like I sometimes see people who kind of diminish their own presence in order to kind of let the person know, or the people around them know, that they're not a threat in any way, you know, because they just want to be liked. And I thought that, you know, that's sort of how I played Robert Ford a little bit, with someone who kind of, you know, his voice is a little bit higher, weaker, things that end in sort of question marks often when they should be statements. He kind of shuffles and looks at his feet and, you know, it's because he wants Jesse to like him. But inside, he sort of feels like he is Jesse's peer. He feels like he should be respected by Jesse. And he assumes that at some point, Jesse's going to recognize what a brave and powerful person he is. And he's going to make him his partner. And pretty soon, there will be, you know, nickel books written about Robert Ford and Jesse James and the Ford and James gang. And that doesn't happen.
You know, for me, a key scene in that, it comes really early in the movie, it's that scene where we see him with Sam Shepard, and he's trying to figure out how to play it with him. And when he's ignored, he just sort of like retreats, and you can see that the wheels spinning in his head. Was that something you guys shot early in the film, or?
Yeah, that was one of the first scenes.
Because that's for me, that's kind of key, and I wonder if that was kind of key for you in playing it too.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of full of hope and resentment. It's got a lot of different things going on. He, you know, he's sort of trying to appeal to Frank James and is sort of, you know, he walks up to him and immediately sort of gets on his knees or crouches down. So he sort of wants him to know, she wants to treat him with respect and sort of flatter him in a way. But he also is trying to prove to him that he's a tough guy. And that's tough to do, and he's not really sure how to do it, and it doesn't work. And so what you see at the end of that scene is the kind of resentment that he carries around with him, you know, how strongly he feels about people that don't respect him. So he leaves that scene, and he never really talks to Frank again. Doesn't really, you know, I think he has kind of a disdain for Frank. I always thought that he thought, in his mind, he was going to replace Frank. You know what I mean? Pretty soon, it would be him and Jesse, and Frank would be kicked out of the gang. But so then he goes to Jesse, and he kind of makes the same appeal. And Jesse is someone who enjoys the flattery. You know, I think that he's played wonderfully by Brad as this guy who's at the end of his life, or sort of feels like he's come to the end of the line and some part of his life, and is, you know, wondering why he ever wanted the things that he wanted. Why did he want to be this well-known, famous outlaw? You know, now he's just on the run. He can't go by his own name. Everyone's after him. He's paranoid. His life is sort of ruined. He's been shot twice. And he's got a lot on his mind. And what he sees in Robert Ford, I always thought, was a kind of younger version of himself, about to make the same mistakes that he had made when he was a young guy. But instead of sort of being able to tell him, you know, sort of take him under his wing in a positive way and say, kid, don't make these mistakes. Look at me, I did. His ego's too involved. He's reminded too much of the things that he wanted, and he's sort of, Robert Ford kind of sparks a kind of nostalgia for what he always thought he was going to achieve, which was just everyone was going to worship him, you know. I mean, Jesse James used to leave these notes on the trains that he would rob, his own press releases. You know, he was very much tied up in his image. He would write letters to the governor, and Andrew Dominik read a lot of his letters, and they're beautifully written. You know, he had a kind of a way with words. And I think that's a big part of why he became who he is, who he's known as. But he's also, and this is sort of forgotten, has been forgotten along the way, he was a Confederate soldier, a hard, mean, racist, murdering criminal. You know what I mean? So,
well, on that note, I'm going to ask you to hold some more of those romantic thoughts about Jesse James. We're going to take a break. My guest is Casey Affleck. We're talking about his new movies, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, then Gone Baby Gone. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is Casey Affleck. He's starring in two new movies this October. He's Mr. October in the film business. Gone Baby Gone is one of the movies directed by his brother Ben. The other is The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. This is interesting, too, because for me in both these movies, it's later in Jesse James, but in Gone Baby Gone, you're playing somebody who really is taking this kind of adult control of his destiny, playing what you might think of from the outside as a kind of heroic figure, but really is not. I mean, he's sort of like trapped in his own kind of rigid moral principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an interesting character because he kind of begins as someone who – he lives in this very tight-knit community in Boston, Dorchester, the kind of place where, you know, mostly just generation after generation, no one leaves. People take a lot of pride in the neighborhood as well as not just the city, but even the kind of 3-block radius that they live on or whatever. And so there's a lot of pressure also to not leave. But he feels conflicted about that. He feels kind of superior towards – the movie opens with him kind of bad-mouthing the cops. And I think he's uncertain about, like, his place in that neighborhood. On the one hand, if people sort of attack it, make fun of it, outsiders come in, he's defensive. On the other hand, people that are there that tell him, you know, you're nothing but, you know, just one of us, some guy on the block, you know, he feels superior.
In some ways, some of the classic tale of a guy who thinks he's smarter than he is and sort of succumbs to grips with the fact that he's trapped himself in this situation. And also, and I don't want to give away the ending, by sticking to what he thinks of himself as moral code because he's smarter and superior to everybody else, he's now stuck with this horrible decision that he's made.
Yeah. He over the course of the movie, he makes a lot of mistakes. He discovers that he kind of doesn't know as much as he thought, and he sort of was not as prepared for, you know, the big wide world as he thought he was, and he ends up being humbled and sort of giving himself back to the neighborhood. You know, he kind of embraces that part of his identity in the end of the movie in a positive way, in a nice way, and I thought that was really interesting. I also like characters who kind of think they know more than they do or make mistakes along the way. I think that, you know, the older that – I'm 32, but there's this Hausman poem about – that I can't remember all of it, but he sort of goes through what he knew when he was young to what he knew when he was – you know, when he was 10, when he knew when he was 15, when he knew his – and he gets into – the last line is now I'm 2 and 20 and I know less and less. And it's, so the idea is that he sort of the thing that he starts to understand, you know, is that he doesn't really understand much, you know, and that he doesn't, the more he learns, the more he realizes how little he knows. And I think that that's true about this character. And that was one of the things that really appealed to me about him in the movie.
It's The Treatment. My guess is philosopher and actor Casey Affleck. I guess for me, for both these performances, they're both about the downfalls of pride. You know, the two guys who really, one way or another, are caught up in their own pride and then are forced to live with these decisions they made based on pride. And by the end, they both really know better but are too proud to sort of step away from them.
Mm. Well, you know, a lot has been said already about the ending of Gone Baby Gone and sort of why he makes the decision that he makes, the character. And, you know, he's faced with this kind of moral dilemma there in the end of the movie. And it's a pretty emotional kind of moment. And he does something that a lot of people think either they wouldn't have done or isn't the right thing. And I kind of feel like it's absolutely the right choice. And I'm not sure that I would have been able to make that choice because it requires certain amount of wisdom and kind of an ability to sort of detach from your emotions and sort of make a clear-headed decision. And I often find myself not being able to do that. But I think that it really there's no other course of action for him in the end.
But it also traps him there. I mean, he's kind of made himself the sentinel of this neighborhood. And now he's really got to be the father figure in this neighborhood, too, because of this decision that he's made.
I guess in some ways, but I don't think he has any plans of going anywhere. You know, it's not exactly a happy ending, but it's also it doesn't seem so tragic or sad to me. It feels like...
Wow, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big tragedy of the movie, the kind of thing that I come away with feeling most strongly is that we kind of let children down every day all over the country and probably all over the world, and that people, the kind of state agencies, social services that are supposed to be protecting children, they need to be funded and they need to be empowered. And they, right now, their hands are tied in a lot of situations where bad things are happening to kids. And
that's what a lot of Lehane's books are about. They're mm-hmm. about that sort of abandonment of children, really, one way or another. I mean, there's something awful that happens to a child early on in a lot of his books yeah. to set these things into motion.
Yeah. It's obviously a kind of very potent device, you know, and it certainly works in this movie. And I think that Ben tempered it and, you know, it all. He never sort of took advantage of that. You know, it's not like you have a movie where you take a puppy out and you shoot it and you're going to get people crying, you know, but it's really cheap and manipulative. And I think Ben was aware of that in this movie and sort of it was a bit of a tightrope walk. You know, he didn't want to kind of exploit the subject matter, but he also wanted to honor it in a way and sort of deal with it as, you know, what it was. And I think he did a good job.
But I think, too, and I wonder if you thought about this in retrospect or saw it as you were doing these movies, that these guys are two proud guys, you know. And they're both, I mean, just think about that looking at the Jesse James novel again, how much pride figures into both that for both Jesse James and for Bob mm-hmm. Ford. And thinking about Gone Baby Gone 2, pride is a big thing for both of these characters that you play.
Robert Ford definitely feels a kind of trampled pride. And Patrick in Gone Baby Gone feels like a sort of uncertain pride. You know, he doesn't really know what he's supposed to be proud of. He's kind of trying to figure that out along the way.
But he's also easily insulted, Patrick. I mean, you know, I mean, he really stands up for himself when he feels like if his pride has been wounded. Mm-hmm. You know, that happens a number of times for him, and certainly in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think he's sort of an angry person. I think he's cynical about people, and for some reason, somewhere along the way, he sort of got to feeling like, you know what? I'm not being treated as well as I should be. You know, I think that he's probably the kind of guy that was tempted to go into the police force, but he's hated the kind of authority of it and sort of hated having to kind of kowtow to people who he thought weren't as smart as he was. And so he didn't do that. So he kind of winds up being a private investigator where you got no boss and you kind of work all by yourself. And he's definitely proud. And Robert Ford is definitely proud. The thing I love about Robert Ford, after he kills Jesse James, is, you know, that was the stuff I never knew anything about. I don't think anyone knows anything about. And it's so, to me, it's really beautiful and tragic. I think that, you know, Robert Ford, after he killed Jesse James, he did not devolve into this being a horrible guy. He never killed anyone else, never really committed any other crimes. He was obviously a very sensitive, you know, maybe even a kind of gentle person.
Who became a sideshow.
Who became this sideshow, you know, young at 19, you know, he thought like, oh, this is it. I'm finally going to get the kind of respect that I deserve, the acknowledgement. And so, of course, I'll do a play about Jesse James, about, you know, reenacting how I killed Jesse James. I'm proud of it. It was hard to do. No one else could do it. He did the play and everyone did know who he was. He was more recognizable than the president of the United States. What he didn't anticipate was that attention might be negative. So he just thought like, God, if people can just see me, that'll feel good. But then once they saw him, it didn't feel good because they hated him unfairly, but they hated him. So he had to kind of try to disappear. But it was hard to disappear because, as I said, he was more recognizable than the president. So he just was on the run for the rest of his life, which was another 11, 12 years. And in that time, all he did was try to open a business. People would burn it down. He would open another one. You know, he just kept going and going and going. And I think he was kind of a beautiful person in the end of his life.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Casey Affleck. He has two new movies, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. It's weird because to me, both these movies are about guys who are trapped in very, very small worlds. and can't get out of them. The known world for Bob Ford was that territory, you know, and if he got out of it because of what the media was like, if anybody knew anything, word got out about him. And if you couldn't read, somebody would make up some version of some story that happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And with Patrick, you got somebody whose world is circumscribed because of his own attachment to it. So there's two guys who are trapped in really small planets. It must have been really interesting to play guys like that.
Yeah, it was, you know. I mean, that feeling of being trapped was not the focus of
Gone Baby Gone. As you were doing
Yeah,
it?
Absolutely. Definitely with Robert Ford.
But you didn't see it so much in Gone Baby Gone.
In Gone Baby Gone, I just kind of focused on other things because I felt like Patrick's kind of focused on other stuff. You know, all he cares about is he's ambitious, you know. He's ambitious and he just, you know, there's this case comes to him, you know. And he has never done anything like this before, right? He's just been this kind of, he has the real kind of mundane workaday job as a private investigator, kind of tracking down people who stop, you know, making payments on their car. And suddenly this like huge media case of this missing girl falls into his lap. You know, all he can see is the opportunity for success. He can't really, he's not focused on saving this little girl's life, you know, at first. I think that he just smells success, you know, and respect and those kind of things. And so it didn't feel to me like the story of a guy who was trapped. It felt like at first the story of somebody who has a huge opportunity kind of given to him and how he kind of gets in his own way of doing what he wants to do with this opportunity. And then ultimately, I never felt like he felt trapped by his kind of circumstances of his life, his kind of where he lives and who he lives with and stuff, as much as he just was embracing it and sort of discovered a part of himself that liked it, that wanted to be there and was completely – so it was just a kind of farewell to arms, you know, for a struggle that he had been having for a lot of his life of kind of like, do I belong here? Do I not belong here? I'm better than these people. Am I not better than these people? And in the end, he says, it's not really a question to ask. This is where I live.
But finally, you know, it's like that line from, I guess, Faust, isn't it, for both these guys, beware the things you want, for you shall have them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely for Robert Ford. You know, he has no, you know, Andrew always said that he was somebody who had no sense of consequences. And I think that that's a fairly apt, nice, succinct way of saying it, you know, describing somebody who has got these kind of blinders on and is sort of can only see in one direction. He's just looking forward. He's just looking at what he wants. And Jesse James is kind of only looking backward. You know, there's two people that are just kind of seeing past each other. And Jesse kind of focused on the past and Robert sort of focused on all the great things that he can be and can have. Without any sense of what really that will entail, you know, what it'll really mean when everyone in the world knows, in the country knows who he is, you know, and how they might just hate him. And it's horrible because they hated Robert Ford and they should have sort of admired him and they admired Jesse James and they should have kind of hated him.
Well, there's an end for us. We're out of time.
Wow. All right.
Thanks so much for doing this, Casey.
My pleasure, Alice.
My guest is Casey Affleck. His new movies are The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. Our technical director is KCRW, is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey, the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.